Good day, and welcome to the University of Minnesota Extension Podcast, University of Minnesota Cropcast. I'm your host, Dave Nicolai, along with my co-host, Dr. Seth Nave. Seth is University of Minnesota Extension Soybean Specialist here at the St. Paul campus. I'm a University of Minnesota Extension Educator in Field Crops. And Seth, we are here to the 1st of April when we're making this recording for this week. We've invited in the special guest that I think a lot of people are thinking about in terms of anticipation of the crop that he works with, and that's Dr. Jeff Coulter. Jeff is Extension Corn Specialist here at the University of Minnesota. Jeff, welcome.
Thank you.
And we asked Jeff to come by, as well as you, Seth, and we want to talk about what farmers are going to be starting to think about, especially this week, and that is planting. Corn and soybeans. We want to preface this with that our crop insurance dates are rolling around here for farmers or thinking about those dates. In a lot of southern Minnesota, it's April 11th field corn, April 21st, a little bit later on soybeans. But besides those particular dates on the calendar, I guess, Seth, there are a lot of things to think about and to plan for. So maybe we I want to start off with yourself in terms of that, and then we can segue back and forth or either one.
Yeah, let's just step back a little bit and look at where we're at today. I think we had a really nice attitude adjustment or psychological adjustment with the snow and the rain last week. So I think we were in really a strange position psychologically relative to the calendar and thinking about crops, and things had been so warm. We were so advanced. Everything was just so messed up. I think people just had a hard time getting their head around this idea that it was still middle of March, but it seemed like it was the end of April and really itchy to get out there. And I think we had what we needed to get was that, again, an attitude adjustment by a bunch of rain and some snow, cooled things off a little bit, let farmers kind of settle back into the regular line of thinking and get things kind of reset. And I think we're there now. So we've had some cool temperatures and things are starting to warm up. And I think now I think it's a good time to really start thinking about planting now.
Well, it certainly was a reality check. You're right. I think a lot of folks thought that, you know, we were all going to be into the field and fast planting here in the end of March. But of course, it does happen here in Minnesota, we can get those late season moisture patterns coming in from the Gulf and from the West. And sure enough, we had it again in terms of that. But the snow is melting right now. So I think we've turned the calendar, Seth. I think it's going to be pretty close.
Yeah, I think, I don't want to steal too much of the thunder from our guest here, but I think we've got good soil moisture now. So I think things, in some ways, it was almost ideal when we had pretty much thawed out soil, lost most of the frost, and we got some rain and snow. Pretty heavy water content, I think. We had, I think, about 3 inches of water content at my house. I know I was in kind of the heavy band. But even that kind of 2 to 3 inch range really, really helped a lot of farmers. And I think there's some rain in the forecast. So I think you mentioned something about the drought monitor earlier, and it really reduced over this past week. So I think in general, I think we're in really good shape.
Yeah, I know the drought map came out this past week on Thursday, and we dropped down from our moderate drought level of over 73% down to the low 40s for a lot of the states. So that's at least a 30% drop. Doesn't mean that we don't have dry conditions, you know, farther down in the soil, but certainly that allow people to be more optimistic. And with that, at this point in time, I guess, Jeff, if you think about optimism, are we sitting pretty good here? We're at the 1st of April. Certainly we are, we're not late, that's for sure, in terms of corn planting. We've got some time here.
Yeah, I think we're in a great situation. You know, we were concerned it was dry. It would be dry at planting. We were talking about things that we could do to conserve moisture and possibly planting a little deeper. And now with this snow, it looks like, and rain, it looks like we're kind of back on track. We're kind of at where we should be. We're normal to average, maybe slightly ahead of average in terms of how the spring is progressing. I think it could be optimal conditions for planting, you know. We were dry. We picked up some moisture. I think it should be just about right.
What are some of the soil types and soil conditions that you've liked to see? You know, you've been here obviously long enough, and in the Minnesota climate here, in terms of having those optimal conditions, not out, obviously out there having, you know, too wet, too cloddy, too heavy, too dry, and so forth. What's that perfect situation, or what's getting close to anyhow that you would prefer?
Yeah, well, kind of a rule of, you know, a general guideline is basically dig some soil about an inch below the depth of your tillage, and if you try to form a ball with it, and if it crumbles, then it's good to go. If it's still sticky and forms a ball or a ribbon, you know, then it's you still need to wait a little bit.
The some of this spring, I suppose, in some places they've had an opportunity to apply anhydrous ammonia. I know that they've done that quite a bit in some of the areas in southeast Minnesota. So there'll still be some options in terms of that. But if we do get the rain, I know one thing that can develop in some of these southern Minnesota soils is, you know, getting some cloddy conditions and so forth. But that's problematic too, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a key is just, you know, wait until soil conditions are fit. You know, a lot of times a lot of the field looks good, but then you got these side hill seep areas or these little low areas where it's cloddy, and that's just a problem. You know, when we end up tilling the soil and creating clods, then we plant in that, we end up having like seed to clod contact rather than seed soil contact. And then we get air pockets in there between the clods, and then the moisture doesn't imbibe quickly and efficiently into the seeds. And then we got variable emergence and just kind of an array of problems that, you know, continues off of that, including, you know, compaction below the depth of tillage, which can be a problem if it's dry, especially for nodal root development. So, you know, those are some things to think about.
Yeah, I think about the psychology behind and also the risk management around planting that farmers face in Minnesota. It's kind of an interesting question because it isn't really about what the calendar date is and what the soil conditions are. I think farmers have to balance a lot of things, including what the planting window is going to be like and what the risk of being held out is going to be. I think farmers are constantly balancing all these questions about, there's very few farmers can plant their corn or soybeans under ideal conditions in a significant way. They're basically trying to get ahead of when things are perfect so that they can plant through perfect conditions and avoid getting rained out and held out of the field. And I think that's an important thing to remember this year, is that when we're ahead of schedule, that farmers aren't necessarily planting to increase yields at this time. Maybe they should think about this early start as a way to give them a little bit more flexibility, that they have a little bit more room to operate. Maybe they don't have to push, in some ways, maybe they don't have to push planting quite as hard because there's a potential longer window for operating and planting machinery operating days later into the spring here. So I don't know. I just kind of throwing out some general thoughts on this. I don't know how you feel about it, but I tend to think about these things in kind of strange ways. And so I just wonder if that rings for you at all, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, from a corn standpoint, we're always excited to get out there and, you know, be one of the first people to get our corn planted. But when we look at the actual data from planting date trials and stuff, there's really little yield advantage to getting the crop planted extra early. The main advantage is just by not being late. So if you get a head start, then less risk of being late on the backside of, you know, the remaining part of your acres. But I think we need to balance it and keep an eye on the 7-day forecast and, you know, see what's coming and kind of manage around that.
So what do the planting date figures, I mean, kind of if you imagine those in your mind's eye, Jeff, what does the corn planting date, if you can think about maybe not even the real data, but what you think, imagine planting date response would be in Minnesota, where would the peak be and how flat is that? You mentioned that it's, you just don't want to be late, but what's the ideal date if you had to pick a date for southern Minnesota? Is there a date?
Probably around April 24 to May 6, give or take. But, you know, anywhere between about April 20 to May 10 should produce yields that are within a couple percent of the maximum. So,
And that's really close to soybeans. So I think if I do the same kind of thing in my mind, I think based on Bruce Potter's data at Lamberton, he has the best set of long-term data on soybean. If we think about that, we really have, the thing peaks right around the first week of May. And I think the reason why we have a bit of a peak there is that there is an opportunity for having low yields when we plant super early, because there's a little bit additional risk with planting early. And of course, we have a penalty when we plant late. So what we end up with was very early planting. You can have a chance of having the highest yields, pretty good chance of having your highest yields with a very early planting. But you also have a chance of having pretty low yields. And so you have a greater spread in that data with planting early. And so I don't really think that there's a lot of advantage to planting too much ahead of May 1. I think there's an opportunity to get some good yields if we have the right weather at the end of the year and the right setup. But it just feels to me like our old traditional agronomy wisdom still holds, that corn probably has a few days advantage over soybean for the optimal planting day, maybe a few days to maybe even a week.
You know, I was had a chance this morning, Jeff, to look at our University of Minnesota Extension website, and you have a very good page on there on corn production. And maybe to echo what Seth was saying, I think a lot of the data indicates, if I remember this correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, even if that whole time period between April 6th to April 21st, even by the bushels, by the end of the year, there wasn't a lot of difference in a huge yield bump and so forth. And that was consistent if you went really early versus even if you're in that 20th to 21st. So, you know, if people are planting early, maybe it's more from a logistical thing and they got to cover the acres or impending rain and so forth. But I think a lot of the data that Seth is referring to you have indicated that, you know, you're not going to get a significant bump by being here early April versus mid-April.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically from, you know, thinking about planting early, it's like I don't think about getting extra yield. I just think about having less acres planted on the later side.
Right.
That's the main advantage. And, you know, hopefully that early planting is done under good soil conditions, which it often is. You know, if you're going in early, it's likely it's going to be better soil conditions on those fields.
So in soybean, we see a pretty good, the only real advantage I see with early planting in soybean, so when we're kind of in this late April period, when the only time we get a good response from that is when we actually have the weather at the end of the year that really supports high yield. So if we're going to have a droughty year, or if we've got a poor yielding field in general, those don't seem to respond to early planting at all. And I think that makes some sense. But what I also have seen in our data is that we also have to pair that early planting with a long maturity soybean. So something that's a little bit longer than normally adapted for that range. And I think that's to take advantage of that good conditions late in the year. So you're setting up a soybean for the ability to respond to a really good August, September environment, basically, by early planting. And if that doesn't come, you don't get anything from it. So in corn, do you suggest farmers plant a little bit longer hybrid when they are out there, their first planting? Is there any maturity interactions that you'd recommend?
Yeah, generally we've seen that, you know, if you're going to be planting early, it makes sense to be planting your longest maturity hybrids first from a risk management standpoint, you know, so that they dry down a little better. We've been seeing a little bit of a yield benefit to slightly longer maturity hybrids. And I think over the past 15 years or so, farmers have been slowly creeping forward on, you know, the length of the maturities that have been planted. So, you know, yeah, it makes sense to start out with your longest maturity hybrids first.
Yeah, I think probably it's all this is probably the physiological part of the corn and soybean is probably all the same thing. We're pushing maturities, we're pushing populations, we're pushing dates of planting, partly due to the environment changing a little bit, but also increased production practices and other things. And it's all kind of going together. It's helping support those some of those higher yields.
You know, one question that we get every year, and I think, you know, we can talk about it, but it necessarily isn't probably the big driver here, is soil temperature. And, you know, we're trending to be in the next week into the 60s for air temperature. But I don't know, Jeff, and maybe Seth too, what are your thoughts about what soil temperature? Is that a major consideration, something in the background, relatively minor with today's hybrids and seed vigor? Any comments on that? Do we need to take that into account?
Well, for corn, germination isn't going to really start until soil temperature is 50 degrees, but we don't need to wait for 50 degrees before we start planting. The key for corn is, you know, thinking about what that soil temperature is going to be during the next 2 days after planting, and we don't want it to drop into the lower 40s or below within 2 days after planting. So, you know, if we're in the mid to upper 40s, you know, I think it's good to go, especially if the forecast looks like it's not going to drop lower soon after planting.
Now you're talking about at the 2-inch in soil temperature?
Soil temperature, two inch depth.
Yeah, and soybean, I take a completely different view of the world than most people. Like most things, I think, around here, I take a kind of a different angle on it. And I look at it this way, is that basically soybean requires about 70 heat units to emerge. And so when we're thinking about this very early planting, farmers don't wait till the frost-free date to plant. They plant ahead of that. And what we've really determined is that farmers are actually walking back about 70 heat units and planting at that time so that the soybeans come out at the time when they're pretty much outside of the intense frost risk day, at least 90% free of frost by those dates. And so that's somewhere towards the beginning of May, I think, is what we're at in southern Minnesota for those 90% days. So farmers are kind of backing up, and that's basically what we've decided, is that farmers can really plant soybeans about whenever they want if they're willing to let them sit around in the soil. The soybeans, we're going to, as soon as they accumulate that 70 or so heat units, then they'll come out of the ground, and then that's when we're really concerned about frost. Now that we're kind of outside of this, I think we're outside of this really deep freeze potential where we could have some freezes really, really deep in the soil. I think we're a little bit free of that. So I think of it that way, as if farmers really could plant, because soybean tends to be a cheaper crop to replant, farmers could get out there and plant it early, but they just have to be willing to let those things sit around for 3 weeks before they pop out of the soil.
You know, we've talked a lot about southern Minnesota here and central Minnesota, but any comments for our listeners that perhaps would be thinking about things in Red River Valley, or more northern Minnesota? In terms of that, what kind of adjustments would you make if you were farming in those areas?
Well, I would back the planting dates up move them forward by a week, you know. So, you know, instead of thinking about starting, you know, April 20th, you know, you might want to wait till it's, you know, maybe April 27th or something like that. But at the same time, it's a lot of factors to consider. You know, the soil types up there, a lot of them are very fine textured. And if they get wet, you know, you can be waiting around a long time before you get back in. So it's kind of hard to make a broad, you know, generalization. I mean, the other thing that's a little challenging up there is, you know, once it gets to be about May 24 or so, you kind of want to be done with your planting of your corn. Otherwise, you start to run in high risk of not meeting maturity before the fall, before the frost in the fall. So a lot of things to consider. I would back the planting date, or, you know, move the planting dates ahead a little bit. But, you know, it's all relevant. And
yeah, and Jeff and I have to kind of get in line behind wheat and sugar beets here,
sure,
too. So,
sure.
So the good part about corn and soybean management in the north is that they're making all the tough choices on pushing those other crops in first, and those things are coming first. And once they get their wheat and their sugar beets in, then they can think about corn and soybeans, and then they can kind of tick down the list. And so they know those fields and when they can get in those. But I agree with Jeff, is that the planting dates, the actual planting dates in many years, unless we get these late snows or heavy rainfall in the spring, northern Minnesota doesn't end up having much of an effective delay in planting in a lot of years. And I think it's because simply because of, you know, supporting what Jeff said, is that there's a push to get in there and get all those acres covered.
Certainly, there can be frost in northern Minnesota, obviously, and they do get the late frost in terms of in May. But all things being equal, I mean, it's obviously not going to grow in the bag. So I think that's your reference point here, too.
Yeah, I think my feeling is when I talk to farmers that farmers in the north are generally more sensitive to frost than farmers in southern Minnesota. I think they're, even though they do end up getting delayed a little bit, I think they've gotten nipped more. And I think it's simply just because they're farming in an environment where they're really pinched by the between spring and the winter, you know, between winter and on both sides of their seasons. They really have to be aggressive and get in there and get those crops planted. And I think there is more, they do tend to have more frost issues as we get up into the valley.
I wanted to segue something else is, even though they might have their seed obviously all in hand, they can still make adjustments, Jeff, with the planter. And that is, you know, given maybe we're in early and so forth, but let's talk about a little bit about population. You've been involved with a number of studies and previous to that, other people here as well at the University of Minnesota. There's been some rules of thumb, you know, in terms of adjusting plant population for yield, et cetera. Let's talk a little bit about that, Jeff, in terms of what people might be hearing or thinking and what can they do yet to fine-tune their planting situation?
Yeah, you know, so for corn, kind of a general guideline is around 34 to 36,000 seeds per acre should optimize yield. But interestingly enough, I've been part of some on-farm trials where we've been doing variable rate planting. And, you know, sometimes in high yield fields in southern Minnesota, even like 33,000 seeds per acre can maximize yield and profit, especially. So, you know, some things like that to consider. We've done the last couple of years, we've done some trials in continuous corn at Lamberton and Waseca under a wide range of yield environments, comparing 34,000 and 38,000 seeds per acre. And in all cases, there was no difference between 34,000 and 38,000 seeds per acre for yield in continuous corn. So that was a little interesting. You know, I had anticipated that, you know, under intense management and higher yields, good conditions, that, you know, we would get a benefit to the 38,000, but so far we haven't seen it. So that's a little bit of what I've seen recently. You know, a lot of people, well, most people have the variable rate planting capacity. Whether or not they're using it is another question. So sometimes people are wondering, okay, where do I start? Or, you know, how much do I flex the populations in the field? You know, corn can adjust a little bit due to not enough plants or too many plants. Some kind of general guidelines are for every 10 bushel per acre difference in yield level within the field, the optimum planting rate is going to vary, is going to increase by about 700 to 1,000 seeds per acre. So that means that if you got one zone in the field where the maximum yield is just going to be around 200 bushels an acre, and then you got another zone that's yield's going to be about 210 there, maximum yield based on historic yield maps, then in that higher yielding zone, it's should need about 700 to 1,000 more seeds per acre. Kind of a general guideline. I don't anticipate any benefit really to planting more than 38,000 seeds per acre. One could probably go as low as maybe the low 30s. One in lower yielding areas of the field, one needs to be a little careful or be thinking about, you know, the risk of planting too few seeds per acre, you know. That's something else to think about, because if you have a lower yielding zone in the field and you back down too far in the population, and then what happens if you get sufficient rainfall that year and you end up having good yielding conditions? Well, then that low yielding zone in the field, you've already kind of set it up for low yields because you don't have enough plants there. So that's something to be a little bit cautious about as well.
Yeah, I do something similar with, you know, thinking about variable rating. I think farmers, even farmers that aren't variable rating, need to think about their fields as being variable and then how to treat that entire field. If they're going to do a flat seeding rain, I think you brought up, I think this is part of your point, is that if you've got a field that has higher yielding environments within it, then increasing the population, you could potentially capture a few extra bushels in those higher yielding areas within the field. On the other hand, those lower yielding areas within the fields, you're probably, wasting some seed. You've got extra seed you're dropping. And so, I think splitting the difference and understanding the proportions of fields that have high versus low yielding areas in them, even if farmers aren't necessarily variable rating themselves, I think it helps them think about. And probably most farmers have, I think, come to these kind of median numbers anyway through trial and error, and I think they have pretty good handle on what works for them. But it's I think it's another way to think about establishing yield, is think about those areas within a field, even if you're planting a flat population.
Well, that being said, Seth, if you think about getting out there early, and even from a soybean standpoint and a full season variety, any general parameters, low and higher numbers that you would throw out for, southern and central Minnesota to keep in mind in terms of that, without obviously being excessive, in terms of running into other considerations, not just the cost of the seed, of soybean seed, but where are things kind of settling out for a lot of growers right now?
Well, it's a huge range. It goes back to what I was talking about with variability within fields. I think some farmers that want to make sure that every acre has enough soybeans within the whole field in southern Minnesota, they're planting 150. Farmers that are willing to have a few acres that might be a little bit short of seed. And in soybean, it's the other way. It's the low-yielding areas that need a little extra population. And so those areas... They might miss out on a couple bushels if they're being too conservative on their seeding rates. So I've done some rough numbers, and it's basically if you look at what farmers are doing, they can plant anywhere between about 125 and 175,000 on a flat seeding rate and probably at least pay for their seed. Those that are planting higher seeding rates have a little bit more consistent yields throughout the field. Those that are low on that save a little bit of money on the front side and in terms of seed costs. And so the economic curve is almost entirely flat. So it's been one of the frustrations in my life, is I thought my job as a soybean agronomist was to go out and tell everybody what perfect population to plant, and find out that there probably is no really good one number, and farmers can probably plant a wide range of populations. The only caveats to remember, I think, that are really important is white mold areas we need to reduce seeding rates on, and those are generally tend to be higher yielding anyway. But farmers definitely should be thinking about that. And so farmers have white mold spots in fields especially should consider a variable rating or reducing populations overall, because that can really hurt our yields. And then on the other side of this is iron deficiency chlorosis. We just need higher populations in those fields. So those are the only two things that really interact. Otherwise, it's basically yield driven. And unfortunately, we don't know. Oh, we did some work on variable rating soybean, and we don't really know what areas of fields are going to yield better than others. Obviously, some of the sandy knolls are going to be lower yielding year after year, and we need to plant those at higher seeding rates. But a lot of the other zones within soybean fields differ year over year. And so if we can't predict where those high and low yield areas are going to be in a given year based on rainfall patterns and temperatures, we can't really create good prescriptions for yield map or for planting maps.
So Jeff, we're still early, obviously, here in terms of, relative maturity. Hybrids, farmers typically plant a range of things that gives them more opportunity, in the fall for harvest and, et cetera. But I think you're pretty comfortable, aren't you, with obviously staying with that, but, keeping in mind, there might be some options and some things to consider in terms of quote, having a range of relative maturities out there. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, having a range of relative maturities helps spread risk a little bit. The thing for corn is the critical period is that, probably 12 days before tasseling to about 2 weeks after tasseling. And, you know, by having a range of maturities and a range of planting dates, that's going to kind of spread when that, you know, peak pollination time occurs. So if we have hot, you know, dry, windy conditions, that, you know, all your acres aren't exposed to those same conditions at the same time. So it's kind of helps, you know, not put all your eggs in the same basket.
Well, certainly for a lot of the, you know, we can stay, you know, we're not obviously concerned about that. If we have to come back and talk about this again, it would be, you know, if we're into that late May, early June to make some, you know, changes in terms of what they have already on the warehouse floor.
Yeah. I think there's no reason to be too concerned at this point. And, you know, if we have to think about switching maturities, we can kind of, you know, address that later. But I'm optimistic that this year we won't have to run into that too much.
I do want to address this this question that has been hanging out for the last couple of years about planting corn versus soybean. And I want to give you, again, another kind of twisted view of the world through my eyes. And that's this idea of, again, risk management around these two crops. I'm not a proponent of planting soybeans before corn from a yield perspective and a flat economic perspective. I think corn should respond better to early planting than soybeans. So I don't understand the drive for early planting. If corn is going to respond to a little bit earlier planting than soybean, there's just absolutely no reason why you would plant soybean first. But I do think that there's an opportunity in soybean through risk management, and that it is a little bit lower economic risk to plant early. Soybeans, as I mentioned earlier, can hang out in the soil for 3-4 weeks and without any real huge problems in many cases. If a farmer needs to replant a field of corn or soybeans, I think they'd much rather replant the field of soybeans. Maybe there's some situations where you've got some, where we were talking about working days earlier, maybe you've got a marginal conditions. Maybe a farmer wants to get going a little bit early, and maybe soybean is the answer for them for a field or two to put in some soybeans before corn. But I think it's all working around this question about working days and risk management and getting out there in the field and getting something done. And I think if farmers really are so itchy that they got to do something, maybe they want to try a few soybeans early and plant those and see how they do. I think there's just a lower risk for them in the end.
You know, a lot of farmers might have an option of having more than one planter, you know, often larger operations, and dedicate one to the other. I think that's what we've seen to some extent, isn't it, Seth?
Yeah, we are. I'm talking to more and more farmers. If they do have the land and labor and equipment availability, that they can split their operations and plant corn and soybeans at the same time. But, you know, there's so many more things than just a planter and a guy to run it. We need, you know, it's questions about getting pre's down and those kinds of operations too that come along with planting. So I think when it works for folks, it's a great idea. I love the idea of planting corn and soybeans at the same time on farms, but I think the number of farmers that are able to do that is very small. I think it's a nice system when it works, but I don't know that it's practical for most farmers today.
Well, your point is well taken on pre-emergence herbicides, and certainly that's a big component of our recommendations here at the university, is to diversify that and have that ability in that timing, so you're not overly dependent on, you know, just post with that. And, you know, on the flip side, we want to make sure we have weed control throughout the growing season. Well, Jeff, we're kind of filling up the time here a little bit on our podcast. Are there some other things that you wanted to touch on? Anything else to mention that we probably didn't that we want to make sure that people keep in mind?
Well, you know, I think this is a year where margins are kind of tight, so people are thinking about what can I do to reduce costs and what are some inputs where I could pull back on a little bit to try to save a little money, you know, getting a lot of questions on that. You know, there's some things that we can do, but at the same time, we want to be careful not to, you know, pull back too much so that we set ourselves up for low yield or poor success. You know, I guess there's things like soil fertility. I mean, it's important to have good soil fertility, and, you know, we don't want to skimp too much on that. But, you know, we can, if times are tight, we can think a little bit about what we're doing and, you know, sometimes like thinking about, well, for P&K, maybe thinking about university guidelines rather than you know, the maintenance or applying based on crop removal.
Crop removal, yeah.
At least for 1 or 2 years might save a little money. I don't know how, other things like nitrogen, you know, if we're using split applications, it makes sense to think that you might be able to reduce the N rate a little bit. You know, maybe thinking about what N rate are you applying and how does that align with the university guidelines, you know, thinking about those kinds of things. If your crop is showing no nitrogen deficiency by the end of the year, it's even in the lower leaves, that's a good indication that the total N rate was probably a little more than what was economically optimal. So there's things that we can do to, you know, kind of reduce the inputs a little bit without sacrificing yield and may actually produce more profit. But, you know, it kind of depends on, you know, how much effort do you want to put into it and that kind of thing. But in many cases, it could be quite profitable.
I think you alluded to that when we talked about population and there's no, in a lot of cases, probably not a big driver to go overly high in that population and keeping that within reason. I think that's what a lot of the data is showing us.
Yeah, and I've been surprised by that. I was always kind of under the mind frame that, you know, we push the population higher, we should get higher yield, especially in high yield environments. And that just hasn't really been the case. There's been very few instances where I've seen that, you know, we get a significant yield boost for anything above 34 to 36,000 seeds per acre. So not saying that it doesn't exist, but I think, you know, and especially over 38,000, I don't think it's very likely at all that you're going to see much of a yield boost and probably not an economic boost.
Well, Seth, we're going to give you the last word here today.
Well, I'd just like to tie this back to our questions about planting date and aggressiveness out there. Jeff brings up a really good point about, you know, the tight margins. And I think farmers, for the most part, they're going to act similarly with their inputs and then how aggressive they are in inputs and how what their planting dates are. But we definitely don't want to see a disjuncture here where farmers are super conservative on all their inputs and don't that are really concerned about their economic outlay on the crop, and then they rush to plant a crop and they mud it in early because they want to, you know, hit a home run on the yield side from early planting. And I think that's something we just want to caution against, because you know, if things are really tight, I think we just need to make sure we're hitting, you know, singles and doubles out there and just get the crop planted in a good timely way and make sure to nurture it and not be in a situation where we're going to have to replant and put all the extra diesel and all the extra seed costs involved with replanting a crop. And then with replanting often comes a planting penalty on that too. So we just want to avoid those.
Well, there's certainly an opportunity for folks if they want to learn more about this. You both have a lot of good information on University of Minnesota web pages. And if you just go in and search on University of Minnesota Extension under field crops for both corn and soybeans, it's detailed out and so forth. There's a section, I know, on Jeff on planting and Seth on planting on both. So some things to look up. Obviously, there's a lot of data and so forth that we didn't get a time to talk about here today, but I would, you know, welcome you to go and look there, because we spent a lot of time and effort in trying to keep that information out there. And also the University of Minnesota Extension, we publish a number of crop information throughout the year. We'll have other podcasts and field notes and so forth coming up here, and so you'll have a good opportunity to do that as well. So want to thank both of you, Jeff, especially, for being our guest here today to kick off the spring on April 1st here in this particular week. So we appreciate Dr. Jeff Coulter coming by, University of Minnesota corn specialist, and his information as well. And Seth, thanks. Obviously, you're here anyhow, so we appreciate that. So this has been Dave Nicolai with the University of Minnesota CropCast podcast. And Seth, is our extension soybean specialist. We look forward to visiting with you folks here quite a bit more here during the month of April. So thanks again.